Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle I just totally butchered her name for the first time ever. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Well done by me there.
That was amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Michelle A.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in someone whose name I probably won't butcher, our good friend Ryan McGee from ESPN, host of Marty and McGee as well. Ryan, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
I'm good. Yeah, no, as long as you don't call me Marty, it's fine. It happens about half the time. And he and I look so much alike, so
yes.
I understand.
That's true. Yes, you do. So, Ryan, I've talked to many people about this. Joe Rexroad and I have had a lot of fun with this, but there's probably no one I want to ask this question to more than yourself, and that is your thoughts on Brian Kelly and his foghorn leghorn impression at the speech of the halftime of the LSU game.
Well, no, all right, so foghorn leghorn is it, because Marty and I, it's funny, you know, so there's this weird thing, like, I love social media, right? Everybody's so nice. And yeah. One of the things that they'll always come after Marty and McGee about, particularly Marty, is this fake Southern accent. Man, y'all are faking this. You're not real. I'm like, hell, I'm from Rockingham. I'm not sure what it is that you need, and Marty is from like the jungle. I'm not sure what it is that you guys are looking for authenticity. So I put out on social media like immediately, hey, listen, if anybody's looking for a couple of experts on fake Southern accents, you know, we're your guys. And so we went on SportsCenter last Friday night, and I did my foghorn leghorn, because I talked about it. The all-time worst accent in the history of fake Southern accents was Dan Aykroyd in Driving Miss Daisy. And he got nominated for an Oscar. I love Dan Aykroyd, but his only Oscar nomination was him playing Jessica Tandy's son in Driving Miss Daisy, and he sounded like Foghorn Leghorn. I say, mother, you ready to go down to the store, mother? And I'm like, so anyhow, so I'm sure the great people of Massachusetts, as we used to call it, where Brian Kelly's from, I'm sure they thought he was spot on, but the rest of us knew immediately. And I've got British friends. I cover Formula One, and I guess maybe sometimes if I'm on a Zoom call with those guys, I'll start slipping into a British accent. I don't know. I like Brian Kelly. He makes it hard. You can tell he's like Butch Jones' guy, right? Because when you talk to Butch Jones or you talk to Brian Kelly and the cameras are on, I learn so much. But as soon as the lights come on, they become Robotronic, and that's how you end up sounding like Foghorn Leghorn at a basketball game.
I will say that when I thought about him spending just a little bit of time with Kim Mulkey, I was like, if I spent like an hour with Kim Mulkey, I'd probably go, I say,
yeah, you know, right, right, too, right? You're afraid Kim Mulkey's going to punch you in the face if you don't communicate correctly. So, yeah, I get, and listen, I don't have to tell you guys, there are few experiences in the world more infectious than going down to Louisiana. It's amazing. And you do find yourself like wanting to learn about the culture and all that stuff. But, you know, my family, I'm never going to live your past.
Well, let's stick with Brian Kelly. And just the hiring season in general, Ryan, I mean, my goodness, a lot has gone on. But in particular, I'd like your take on, you know, the SEC moves, and I guess we can include Oklahoma in that, right?
Yeah, maybe so.
Sort of, technically.
Yeah, I think, and Oklahoma was really what started all this, right? I mean, Lincoln Riley, you know, cutting and running on a job that no one had ever left before in the history of football, and Brian Kelly doing the exact same thing, you know, almost an hour later, and what we're seeing is, I think that realignment has screwed everything up, and no one knows what's coming. No one knows what it's going to be like. But I think one of the things I get the complaints about early signing periods, and I think those certainly contribute to coaches making these sudden jumps that we've never made in 152 years of college football. But I think realignment is the unspoken cause behind all this, because these jobs are not the jobs they were 6 months ago. And I'm not talking about Oklahoma suddenly becoming a bad job, but I'm saying that it's not the job that it was. And you're Lincoln Riley, right? You grew up in a small town in Texas. Your whole life, the games that you wanted to coach were against TCU and Texas Tech and Texas and those schools. And now you're looking in the crystal ball, and that's not the job you're signed up for anymore. And you know, Brian Kelly, you know, he got a little taste of being in the conference championship game a year ago when Notre Dame played in the ACC title game. And I think he looks in the crystal ball and says, this job isn't what it was. And he's done an amazing job. Both those guys did amazing jobs. I think that's part of it. It's why Sonny Dykes did not want to leave SMU. But he looked in the crystal ball and said, you know, this job is not what I thought it was going to be. And so I think realignment has made these guys look at these jobs differently than they were just 6 months ago. And all these other things contribute to signing down and all that stuff, sure. But I think that's the big thing is it's not even who you're playing. It's just what the job is going to be versus what you signed on for or what you've been doing for, you know, 10-plus years in the case of Kelly.
Ryan McGee on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan, what were your thoughts on the SEC title game? Not necessarily that Alabama won the game, but the fashion in which they won, and how does that change kind of the way you view Georgia and Alabama in the playoff now?
Well, I said it going into the game. I wrote a column about it last week. You know, you guys know I'm a big Star Wars guy, and I said, you know, listen, the opening quote in my column was, you know, when Yoda tells Luke, you know, you have to confront Vader. That's the only way you're going to become the person that you want to become. You have to confront him and defeat him. And that's exactly what the situation was for Georgia. And I was standing on the sideline, and they had that game in their hands. They were up 10-0. And when Bryce Young ran that Jamal Holloway wishbone play, and then two plays later threw that dart from 15 yards out, whatever it was, through double coverage for a touchdown, and Alabama took the lead, it was like they opened up that big roof and, like, Spaceballs just sucked all the air out of the building. Because what happened was that it was that, oh, no, here we go again. And, you know, Marty and I, Dan Mullen was working with us over the weekend with SEC Network, and Marty and I talked to him about, you know, all right, in these games, you know, what's it like when it's a team that you've had a hard time getting around? And he said, he admitted, listen, there's if you're in that situation, there's a team you haven't been able to get around, when all of a sudden they take a lead or all of a sudden they make a big play, you know, you start having to handle it psychologically, not just with the players but with the coaching staff and everyone else. And I think that's where Georgia is. So it was that's what was crazy about it. But yeah, we're all kind of waiting on – I'm writing a column for Friday about Bryce Young and Heisman moments and all that stuff. And, you know, we were all like, well, you know, I said it before the game. I said, if he has a pretty good game against the Georgia defense, even if they lose, he probably wins the Heisman. And, you know, this generational defense we'd all been talking about, and he just shredded them like he was playing, you know, anybody. And so it was quite the night, I tell you that. But it was a lot of, to quote the great Harry Gant from Stroker Ace, all those Georgia fans were like, oh, hell, here we go again.
Stroker Ace. Right. I mean, come on. Who else is quoting Stroker Ace? We do like to do a lot of smoking the bandit on here, but that's strong right there. Ryan, what do you think about the matchups? I've heard a lot of, oh, Georgia's been exposed. Who'd they beat this year? I'm like, if you watch them play, that's still a great defense and team that can win it to me. But do you like Michigan's chances? And then what about Cincinnati?
Well, Michigan is, they've suddenly in the last, you know, that team that lost to Michigan State, I was so angry when the committee kept talking about, you know, when they kept ranking Michigan ahead of Michigan State, even when they each had a loss. And so I was just, that part drove me crazy. But, you know, hey, big surprise, a lot of really smart football people sitting in a room looked at Michigan and went, no, they're pretty good. And, you know, they got a Heisman finalist. You know, we're all talking about a defensive player from Alabama or Georgia winning the Heisman, and the only one that's going to Atlanta or going to New York is from Michigan. And so they're good. There's no question about it. And they're feeling it right now. I mean, you could see, and you're talking about the psychological part of it, you know, in NASCAR, right? We've covered all these guys. Kyle Larson, you know, finished second a million times. I remember Casey Kane kept finishing second. And then when they finally won a race, they won like five out of the next seven. You know, and Jeff Gordon was like that. And so I look at these teams like that where, you know, if you finally get around that team you haven't been able to get around and the talk that just dominates your life, then, you know, you're liberated. And that's what Michigan looks like after finally not just beating Ohio State but pushing them around and then doing the same in the championship game. So it's, I don't know, you know, they're, to me they're the wild card. I mean, I think the Cincinnati story is a great story. If the Alabama team that I saw in Atlanta shows up in Dallas, then Cincinnati's in trouble. Now, if the Alabama team that I saw earlier in the year a couple of times shows up against Cincinnati, they got a chance. But to me, you know, they've got it tuned up at the right time, you know, here at the end of the year. So what I'm saying is I think it'll be an all-SEC final in Indianapolis. But you know, that being said, it's 2021. And we've all been wrong about everything all season long.
Ryan McGee, one of the best in the business, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexra. Ryan, appreciate so much your time this morning. Thanks for joining us, my man.
All right, boys, appreciate it.
Absolutely. Sure. Ryan McGee from ESPN, host of Marty and McGee as well, our guest here on Robbie and Rexra. We'll come back, react a little bit to what Ryan McGee had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The NFL nearing the playoffs in Week 14 gives us a big divisional rematch between the Browns and the Ravens. And FanDuel Sportsbook about to make it even bigger because FanDuel is giving new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can win $150 on a $5 bet. Personally, I like the Browns in this game. I think the Ravens are struggling right now. I think the Browns come away with a big win and make the AFC North even more confusing, but you take it any way you want to take it. Offers like this are why I love betting with FanDuel Sportsbook. When you win, you get paid in as little as 2 hours. It's America's number one sportsbook. So just sign up with promo code ROB before the Sunday afternoon matchup and you can win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use promo code ROB so they know that I sent you exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only, a $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market, a max bonus of $150. Bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee site credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Calgary Flames at Bridgestone Arena coming up next Tuesday? Well, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see the Nashville Predators take on the Calgary Flames. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, December 13th. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, John Hines coming up at 7:30, Preds head coach, as they take on the New York Islanders tonight. So looking forward to that conversation coming up here in about 10 minutes. Thanks to Ryan McGee for joining us in the last segment. It always somehow ends up on Star Wars with our good friend Ryan McGee, but I enjoy it every single time.
To Spaceballs.
Star Wars to Spaceballs. That was a great transition that he had.
Stroker Ace.
That was there's a lot in that segment. I enjoyed every bit of it. Thanks to Ryan McGee for coming on with us. It does kind of feel like an all-SEC final. Like, I feel an Alabama-Georgia rematch coming on pretty strongly, but I don't want to disrespect Michigan because I have kept waiting all season long, admittedly, for Michigan to fall off and for Harbaugh to pull a Harbaugh this year, and it's not really happened to this point. They look to be an awfully good football team and probably going to be a slugfest in the Michigan-Georgia game, but I think they'll give themselves a chance in that game. I'd just like Georgia to come out on the other side.
Yeah, I think – I mean I don't like Michigan's offensive matchup against Georgia. I don't like anybody other than, I guess, Alabama on that Saturday. And I bet you there's a lot of other Saturdays based on how Alabama's played this year where I don't think it would go well for them. But they, hey, give them credit for what they did. I still fully believe in Georgia's defense. I don't know how they got no pass rush on Bryce Young. It was just weird,
yeah,
almost. But Michigan does not do the same things well that Alabama does. It's like it's really the other way around, and I think that absolutely is a good matchup for Georgia. But Michigan's defense is, I think, good enough to make this a game, keep this a game, keep the score down. That's what they're going to have to do. And, you know, we have the questions with Georgia, quarterback, and all that stuff. I mean, I think it's still going to be Stetson Bennett, but there may be some lost confidence there. And as Ryan McGee said, Michigan's riding a wave right now.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Nate texting in. Ryan McGee said he didn't like Michigan being above Michigan State. We talked about Cincinnati getting blown out and what people would say. What about Michigan potentially getting blown out? It's not totally out of the question. What would we say if that happens against Georgia?
Well, again, what we'd say is this normally happens in the playoff.
Yeah, like that's not a I mean, it's not a new thing in the college football playoff. People get destroyed in the semifinal all the time.
Yeah. And including even like, I mean, Oklahoma has been blown out how many times?
Well, think about the butt-whooping that Ohio State put on Clemson last year.
Right. I mean, they got blown out. I mean, shoot, Ohio State blew out Alabama, basically, right? What was that? They beat them by like 17 or something in that first year when Ohio State arguably shouldn't have been in. I mean, I covered Michigan State. It was a nice 10-0 game against Alabama at halftime, and it turned into a whatever the heck it was, a 1-3. in Dallas, where Alabama seems to go a lot to bludgeon people in this thing. So, Michigan could get blown out. Yeah. I mean, if Georgia's offense plays like they've played a lot of the year, I mean, I think Georgia will probably cover. I don't know that they're going to blow them out, but like 14-point win kind of thing. And what we'll say is, well, it's the same. But like for people who see that stuff and then say, well, why would we want to expand? My answer is then you'd have some good games in the playoff. I mean, if it's the haves are that much better than the have nots in a given year, then no matter what your playoff looks like, you're going to have blowouts eventually. But at least in an expanded field, you'd have more teams involved. And since we're totally obsessed with the playoff now, may as well make it a little bit more accessible for people.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ron texting in, Georgia only lost because they didn't want to play back-to-back games. It's coming from Ron on the text line, I guess, against Alabama. I don't know. I don't think Alabama would have made it if Georgia won.
That message board geniuses account?
Yeah.
Oh, there's an awesome one about like the conspiracy of like Kirby
through the game
kneeled on the sword and said, yes, I will, this is better for our conference, and then they get that benefit, and you know what, it'll be a humbling, like it'll be humbling for my team, like it actually makes sense. Let's go lose this game, folks. Let's do it.
Not only lose, let's just get thrashed.
Yeah, it'll be good for the soul. Chicken soup. Yeah, that's a great follow.
Hey, maybe just one step ahead. He's playing chess, all of us playing checkers at Kirby Smart.
I mean, seriously, you know, the thing is, you think back to Mark Richt, and he did a really good job. They won a lot. They recruited really well, right? But Kirby Smart is still – he's still well outperformed Richt, I would say. But if they don't win it this year and with all these veterans and stuff, because they could have a Clemson-like step back at some point, right?
Yeah. I've already seen it on Twitter.
It'll get toasty on them.
Bulldog Twitter. There is a section of it that is done with Kirby Smart. Like, all right, he can't win the big game. Let's go find somebody
else. Can you at least wait and watch this postseason?
I'm telling you what it is, man.
I'm going to call my shot right now. Georgia's winning it all.
Really?
Yes.
I called that.
You already called that shot?
I put it on Twitter, and I said Alabama is going to win the SEC title game the other day before the game started.
Okay.
And then I said Georgia is going to win the national championship, and Bob on Twitter went crazy on me and was like, how could you ever say that? Da, da, da.
Which part did Bob have a problem with?
He said that there's no way Georgia could ever win, basically, by the way they played.
Oh, okay. So he got mad after the result of this game.
Yes.
Okay.
After/during. But okay. I agree with
you. Well, I'm with
Rex
you.
Road.
All right. Well, I'm just echoing your shot then.
Okay.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Alabama's going to win the national championship.
Book it.
That's a
wild.
I'm
that's
go
wild,
on a
man.
Wild, wild limb and say that Bama gets it done.
I tell
Saban
you what,
finally wins one.
Saban has lost in this, and Saban's like, you know, it's like how Jared looks at like Brady and Belichick. They've never lost a game from a pick, right? I mean, Saban's gotten his butt kicked in this thing too.
Yes,
I will say with Alabama, John Metchie, that's tough.
That's a tough loss.
That is a tough loss because with those two guys. It's not what they had before with like Waddle and Devontae, but like it's just a problem for people. You still have Bryce Young.
Yeah. Tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity for you later this morning at 8:45. When we come back, we'll be joined by Preds head coach John Hines. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators head coach John Hines. John, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm great. How about you guys?
We are great. Good. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Obviously, a big win for your group against Detroit the other night. What did you like about the way that your team played, and how do you carry that forward tonight as you take on the Islanders?
Well, you know, I thought we really played to the identity that we want to play with. You know, I thought our puck execution was really good coming out of our own zone and through the neutral zone, and that, you know, that allows us to get on the attack, whether it's speed on the rush or speed coming through the neutral zone and put pucks behind the D and get into the forecheck. And, you know, something we've talked with our guys about, you know, the first 20 games, we felt like we really laid a foundation of our identity of how we wanted to play. And, you know, this 20 game segment, we really want to make sure that we reinforce it and build on it and get really consistent in it, you know, and I think it's the identity that we want to play with. You know, there was a lot of physicality to the game. I thought, you know, we were able to dictate how the game was going to be played because of our puck execution. But the thing we really stress with our guys right now is just how we work and compete. And I think when you look at the team play right now, it's you know, everybody looks the same without the puck, how we check and how we play and skate and work as a five-man unit. And then, you know, when we have the puck, then it allows your different skill sets and talent levels to be able to come out and make plays.
So the results, John, you know, been win-loss for a bit, but would you say that what you're looking for, that always obviously don't always necessarily lead to the result you're looking for, has been consistent?
Yes, you know, and it's, you know, it's one of the things we've talked with our guys about that, you know, I think over the course of 82 games, you want to be able to get on some runs where you're winning 3-4, you know, possibly 5 in a row, but there are going to be segments where you get into, you know, sometimes you win some, you lose some, but you want to stay right in the fight, you want to stay right in the hunt and win games and get points. But, you know, I think the most important thing when you're in those segments is that you can't control whether you win or lose every game, but, you know, the process in which you play with and also the identity in which you play with, whether you win or lose the game is going to be the real determining factor in getting consistent wins.
John, obviously without a couple of key guys the other night in UC Saros and Matthias Ekholm battling illness, number one, how are those guys feeling? And what did you make of your team's effort without those guys, particularly on the back end with guys like Ben Harper and Philip Myers coming back in there?
Yeah, both those guys look pretty good. I think we'll see here this morning when they come into the rink where they're at. But we had a off day yesterday, so they had a chance to recover a little bit. So it's nothing long term. It just depends on where they're at for tonight's game. Obviously, we also have the back to back today. But so we'll see where they're at. As far as the guys that came in, you know, Ben Harper came in and played well. It was probably the best game he's played this year for us. It looked more like he was last year. I thought his decisions with the puck were good. He was physical. He obviously got into the fight. He was good on the penalty kill. So, you know, he looked good. I think the conditioning stint sending him to Milwaukee was good for him because he was, you know, he got to play regularly there for the last 2 weeks, which was important for him to get going and get his game going. And Philip Myers came in and did a good job. You know, he's stayed ready. He's worked real hard with the assistant coaches to, whether it's video work or extra work to maintain his conditioning and working on some of his puck play and puck skills. And so he came in and did a good job. And I think adding, you know, it's the importance of having depth. So we missed some players that were playing real well for us, and Ekholm and Benning, you know, but we also are inserting two NHL players into the lineup. Both of them have good size. Both of them play pretty hard. And we thought that their puck play for the most part was sufficient.
John, with Mikael Granlund, obviously been a very important player since he's been here, certainly since you've been here with him. Is this a chemistry thing with those guys, or is he even reaching a new level of playmaking with some of these passes that he's making out there lately?
Yeah, you know, I think the three of them do have good chemistry right now. I think it really kind of came organically where, you know, Granlund has really, you know, he always plays the game the right way. He plays hard without the puck. He's a skilled player with the puck. I think one of the things that's helped, you know, Duchesne and Forsberg both have adjusted their games. I mean, when you look at them play, you know, they're forechecking, they're tracking and reloading, they're 50-50 puck battles. Their play without the puck has certainly gotten better, and that allows you to play those guys against anybody. But also, I think what they're seeing collectively as a group is that, you know, the better that they check when they don't have the puck, because it is a transitional sport, the more opportunities they have to be able to produce offense and use their skill. Now, as far as Granlund, I think there is good chemistry. The three of them work real well together. But his poise with the puck right now, and the thing that's really been impressive with it is not just the ability to see the plays, but the execution that he is. You know, he's putting the puck in the, you know, even if you take that 3-on-3 goal the other night that Forsberg scores, you know, Granlund comes around the net and he makes the pass, but the pass is right in Forsberg's wheelhouse for the one-timer. You know, if that's on his backhand or it's not a great execution play, it's probably not a one-timer and maybe it doesn't go in the net. So his execution with his playmaking reads has been at a high level, and I'd probably say right now it's been the highest it's been, you know, in our time together.
Press coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, you talked a lot about, you know, Dante Fabro's growth from a strength standpoint, from a skating standpoint in the offseason. How have you seen his game be able to build upon itself this year with the increased responsibility that he's had? What have you made of Fabro and his performance so far?
I think Dante's game has been pretty consistent. You know, it is something that Todd Richards and Dan Lambert do spend time with him on. You know, I don't think he's been perfect through the 25 games we've played, but his effort is there in the competitive areas of the game. I think that, you know, the thing that's been really impressive with him is just his assessment of his own game when he comes back and he meets with the coaches about where he's at, whether it's a good game or a bad game. He's right on task with what he is, whether, you know, some games he's really skating and moving the puck well and he's physically strong in battles. There's been some other games where he's looked a little bit slower and it needs to, you know, he needs to play at a higher pace, but he sees those things. So I think he's been pretty consistent. I think his growth has gone in the right direction. And like any young player, you know, he's a work in progress, but his ability to respond and execute the things we're asking him when it's not perfect has been good. He hasn't strung some bad games together. There might be a couple where he's there, but his ability to respond and get up to speed has been good this year.
Well, sticking with young players, Ellie Tolvanen's, you know, had a couple deflections go in here, which certainly I'm sure felt good for him after, you know, going through the drought he went through. So, and you've talked with us before, John, like, look, he's doing the right things out there. He's in the lineup because he's doing everything else, playing without the puck, all that stuff. But what are you seeing from him, and do you, when a player, you know, has a couple breaks like that, or, you know, makes a couple plays, gets the puck in the net, do you anticipate maybe a hot streak?
Yeah, I mean, Tolvanen has been really impressive for a young player that is used to scoring and expecting to score. You know, he checks really well. Like, when you look at the substance in his game, he's a real physical player. He's aggressive on the forecheck. He gets in physical confrontations. He's responsible without the puck. He has, even through that time where he hasn't scored, he was generating real quality chances. I mean, his shooting percentage was at like 2%, but his chance generation was there. And you know, that allows a young guy, like, he didn't get deterred. He just kept playing the right way. He kept earning his ice time. We kept playing him in situations where we believe he can play, and that's a tribute to him. That's him earning those minutes and continuing to play the game the right way, regardless of whether or not he scores. And now, you know, one of the things we had talked to him about was, if you're going to be a scorer, you want to be able to score in multiple ways. And he has the ability to shoot the puck right in the net, as we've all seen, but now he's getting some tips and deflections. He's getting to that hard area of the ice offensively, and he's got a couple tip goals. And, you know, I think the way that his game is playing, he should be more consistent in his scoring as we move on here. But being able to score in multiple ways is really good growth for him.
John, last thing for you here. I've been watching Roman Josi play hockey for like 10 years now, and he still does things on a nightly basis where I just shake my head and wonder how that's possible. Like, do you ever find yourself on the bench when he scores a goal like he did the other night going 1-on-3 where you're just like, how in the world does a defenseman pull that off?
Yeah, I think you're right on there, Robbie. He's one of these dynamic players in the league, and you know, he makes plays that others can't, and he sees plays that others don't, and that's what makes him a special player. And you know, an example of that is obviously the goal that he scored the other night, but just some of the plays that he makes and sees is, you know, you do, like, even as coaches, sometimes you look back and you respect not only his work ethic, but just that the talent level, the vision, and the ability to make those plays is highly impressive.
Well, John, we appreciate you taking time to come on with us this morning. Good luck tonight as you take on the Islanders, and we'll talk to you soon down the road.
All right, guys, thanks. And if we don't talk to you before, have a great holiday.
Absolutely, you as
Thank
well.
You,
Brent's head coach John Hines, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Makes plays that others can't, sees plays that others don't when it comes to Roman Josi. I like that.
That's pretty good.
It's good stuff. I might use that.
Steal that, John. Thank you.
Thank you, John. When we come back, it is time for the best and worst thing in sports for this week. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst thing in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth already texting in with the worst thing of the week. The people who cried for parity in college football and are now upset that Cincinnati is in the playoff. Porth living high right now on the Cincinnati Bearcats.
I don't disagree. I think that's a good candidate. And people who don't, like what we just talked about, don't remember like all the playoff games and blowouts. Oh, and I bet you they get blown out. And then we'll know they never should have been there. Okay, well then Oklahoma should just never be allowed back in the playoff.
Remember when Washington got in there a few years ago?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Michigan State, Washington. it might happen this year too, but let's remember that.
That's right.
No, I'm with you, Porth. In fact, I've got something similar.
We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, go ahead and kick us off. Your best and worst things in sports for this week.
Yeah, my best is Cincinnati making the college football playoff. I mean, that's easy for me. Group of five teams getting that opportunity. I think it's a great thing. You know, and not along with, and this is not really best, but I'll follow it up to Porth's point. Like one of the things I saw this week was like Kirk Herbstreit with a tweet about it. Like, you know, all you people who said this could never happen, you know, what's your next conspiracy theory? You know, and I like Kirk Herbstreit a lot. I think he does a great job. It's not a conspiracy theory. It is set up to make it very difficult for this to happen. I mean, it's set up so that the Power Five, it's a Power Five Invitational is the idea.
I'm here to tell you, if Oklahoma State scores a touchdown on that last play, Cincinnati's not in this playoff.
Yeah,
I don't think they would be.
You may be right. I do think in that instance, so think back to when Ohio State got in and won it, but they got in over TCU and Baylor. To me, that was a brand thing, and the Big 12 got screwed out of it. The only thing with Oklahoma State is like that's not some like, oh, got to have that brand. You know
You're
what
not
I mean?
Keeping that mullet out of the playoff. I don't know
what
you're talking about.
Well, that's true. The mullet is pretty iconic. But you may be right. Regardless, they're in, and that is my best thing. It's awesome. It's awesome for that program. And, again, I think that team, it's like people – I think there's a lot of people on Twitter – this is shocking, I know – who, like, just read the headlines, don't watch the games. It's like Georgia's a fraud, you know, and, you know, Cincinnati doesn't deserve – if you watch Cincinnati play, they had a midseason kind of swoon there where they were kind of, you know, muddling through. But they're good enough to be in the playoff. I think they're – one of the top four teams.
Your worst thing in sports for this week.
All right, I got to call out Darren Rovell, okay?
Okay.
So Darren Rovell, I don't know Darren. He's a very interesting follow. He works for the Action Sports Network, used to be at ESPN.
Pure athleticism.
Yeah, he's a great
runs
athlete.
Runs about a 9 second 40.
There's that. He has all these interesting artifacts on his Twitter. Like, it's an interesting follow, but sometimes he writes stuff. He wrote this thing this week that, like, on name, image, likeness. And, again, the headline is, "Welcome to the Dirty Side of Name, Image, and Likeness." Okay? And so he's leaning in heavily on this the Texas Pancake Factory thing, which is $50,000 to every Texas offensive lineman on scholarship. It's also tied to it's going to be tied to charitable contributions, which, by the way, we've seen a lot of that happen with name, image, likeness. So, he calls this like a slush fund for boosters. So this is how he ends his column. "Cheating used to happen behind closed doors. It will now happen right in front of our eyes."
Oh, boy.
"No, Darren, it's not cheating anymore, Darren. That's the point." Again, whatever it is, if people were getting paid before anyway, and now we're getting to see it, and it's legal, then it's not cheating. It's what should be happening. And it just boggles my mind that people can't figure this out. So that's my worst thing.
There you go. I like it. Michelle Knezevic, your best and worst things in sports for the week.
I'm going to start with worst so then we can end on a high note.
Okay.
UConn women's basketball star Paige Beckers suffered a non-contact injury. I think it was her knee.
It was broken
fibula.
Fibula. Which is actually better than ACL. Okay. Yeah, much better than ACL.
Better than knee. It looked like knee at first, but broken fibula. She's going to be out for like 6 to 8 weeks. It's really sad, obviously, for her because she had an incredible freshman year and now in her sophomore season, but just women's basketball as a whole because she's such a public figure now. People watch the sport to watch her. Obviously, a big loss for UConn all around. Just kind of sucks. But hopefully she can have a full recovery, and she will. She's an amazing player. So.
I'll jump in on that real quick because, we don't want to rip on Gino too much, but she was still in the game with like 19 seconds left when this injury happened, and they were up like 25. But it happens.
Yeah. There you go. Now best in I just didn't know what to say to that. Okay, now best in sports. Actually, it was kind of – we talked about it earlier, how Vanderbilt women's basketball had all of the – had the education day yesterday, and they brought all of these students to the game. They got to have a field trip. They got to have a really great day at a women's basketball game. I think that more programs should do this. I mean, just seeing these kids yesterday, some teachers came up to me saying that they're in lower income schools and these kids don't ever get to go to games like this. And I'm sure we can remember our first ever college game we went to, our first ever professional game we went to. And you remember that for the rest of your life. All these kids just had the joy on their face. It was just incredible. It was so rewarding to see them just getting so excited for a dance cam or being on the Jumbotron. So I think that was my best in sports this week.
They got some awesome in-game hosting too.
Yeah, sure did.
So I hear.
Thank you.
Very nicely done. Well, that's going to be tough for me to follow that, but I'll try anyway. Best thing in sports by far for this week, Brian Kelly. The Brian Kelly fake accent, I mean, that may be my best thing in sports for the entire calendar year. So it's definitely going to make the cut for this week. The Foghorn Leghorn, the fact that Ryan McGee joined us earlier and had a nice Foghorn Leghorn impression that was spot on. It was good stuff. I largely despise Twitter, and I'm getting to the point where I largely despise social media as a whole, but man, Twitter's been fun since Brian Kelly took over at the LSU job. So Brian Kelly, my best thing in sports for this week. For my worst thing, I'm going to go like old man yelling at a cloud for a second here, because hockey is my favorite sport. I love hockey a lot. It is one of my favorite things on the planet, but there is a fundamental flaw with the game right now that just irritates me every time I watch a game. And it happens usually at least once a game, if not multiple times in a game. The inability in this sport anymore for somebody to take a big hit, a clean big hit, and to just get up and go. And nobody on the team has to come and fight. Nobody on the team has to come and respond. Back in my day when I was growing up watching hockey, and yes, I just went there, it used to be if you got hit and it was a legal hit, you just got up and you kept playing. Nobody went to go fight anybody. You said, all right, yeah, that's a pretty good hit. Thanks. And you got up and you played. Now, every time there's a big hit, the benches have to clear. There's a brawl on the ice. You got to get in and get up and, get in a scrum with each other. Nobody can get hit in the sport anymore without people freaking out. Now, I realize we've had two incidents this week in the NHL with Jacob Trouba where he's had some borderline hits. He hit somebody in the head last night. Nathan McKinnon got hit in the head last night. It was a borderline hit. I don't have a problem with you coming to the defense of your teammate if it's a predatory hit. But when you get hit clean, just play the game. It's part of the game. It drives me nuts in the NHL, and it happens on a nightly basis.
So are you, that's a great point, and you're right. It is way more frequent. Do you feel like it's getting soccerish?
I don't think it's getting soccerish. I think it's, oh my goodness, my teammate just got hit hard, so if I don't step in here and do something, it's going to make me look like a bad teammate, so I'm going to go do it. Like, it's just so stupid.
Which is fine if they get anywhere near your goalie or if it's a dirty
hit. Sure.
Like, that's fine.
If somebody hits Roman Josi in the head, I fully expect the Predators to lose their minds and go nuts.
Robbie, you will. You will jump out of the stands.
Oh, yeah, I will. If you touch that man's hair, I'm coming after you. I mean, it's just what it is. But if Roman Josi's skating down the ice and he's not paying attention and somebody hits him right in the Predator logo, there's nothing wrong with that hit. I mean, you just got to get up and play the game. So that's the part of the NHL that just drives me nuts at this moment of you can no longer have, and let's be honest, there's not even really big hits in the NHL anymore. You can no longer have like a medium-sized hit in the NHL without teams on the ice just losing their mind. It drives me nuts.
I'd never really thought of that, but
Just pay attention now. You won't be able to unsee it.
No, but you're right. It's like, it's funny because you think of the NHL as like trying to clean up fighting. Like there's fewer fights than there used to be.
Yeah.
Like in my day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Patty Roy used to be dragged around, his bloody carcass dragged around the ice by Chris Osgood. But there are more. You're like little flare-ups. You're right.
It's dumb.
What can be done about this?
I don't know. Tell people to learn how to take a hit, I guess. Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texting in. Best thing in sports is Jared complaining about college basketball, saying no one cares. He went on another rant about that again yesterday.
Yeah, that was part of our Jared versus Joe that I won as usual. I'm exhausted by it. You're not allowed to talk about college basketball. You can only have Titans takes.
Yeah, that's it. College basketball's done.
I'm rolling my eyes again.
Yes, you are. We'll continue to take your submissions on our best and worst things in sports. Our friend Rainey texting in. Y'all segment about Brian Kelly was the best thing in sports this week. The worst thing in sports is Tennessee's shooting performance against Texas Tech. That was atrocious.
That was ugly.
It was atrocious. Somebody on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, brought up like a 2012 basketball game between Tennessee and Georgetown. The final was like 37-36. I was like, oh, yeah, there's a nice college basketball score for you, 37-36.
Yeah, my buddy David Jones, who covers Penn State, actually said he had a Tennessee-Penn State game from the 90s that was like 33 all going into overtime.
Oh, gosh.
I've seen some Wisconsin hoops games that are definitely have to really push hard to get to 40.
Oh, man. This has been the best and worst thing in sports for this week. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend John Glennon from SI.com, also with NHL.com as well. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the Predators. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.